Downloading 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are...
Hello, I'm Tim Schwartz.
I'm Sean Preece.
But where's Stephen Scott?
He's away! Hey!
That's right, I am Tim Schwartz. There is no Stephen Scott this week, but we'll get to that here in just a moment. I want to welcome everyone to Tech Talk. This is the show where we get a bunch of geeks together, blind geeks specifically, and we talk about technology. We do our best to go out there and find the spam of technology and present it to you as a wonderful filet mignon. At least that's what we try to do. And joining me this week, as he does each and every week here on Tech Talk, he is the tech guru of the United Kingdom. He is the Benny Hill of Tech Talk, if you will. This week, he is the companion to my Doctor Who. He is Sean Preece. Sean, welcome to Tech Talk.
Wow, I don't know where to start with that intro. It's like Stephen Scott never left. We had food, we had geekiness, Benny Hill and Doctor Who's companion. I'll take it. Hello, Tim Schwartz.
Hello, Sean. Well, the Benny Hill reference, I mean, yeah, you got to take that. I mean, the silliness, the entertainment, you do definitely bring the silly sometimes, along with the technology expertise. I at least put that one first.
I'll take it.
And the companion comment, well, I mean, think about it. The companion always is the one that really figures it out. I mean, the doctor kind of gets the credit in the end and saves the day, but it's really the companion for the first 45 minutes of the show that gets him there, really, honestly.
Yeah, I get it. I am the sex appeal of the show. Yeah, that's fine.
that's exactly right. You're just the sex appeal of the show. Well, anyway, welcome everyone to another episode of Tech Talk. And as we said at the top of the show, Stephen Scott is not here. Now, he tells us that he's gone away on holiday, Sean, but I'm not so sure because I think it's ironic. This past week, he hasn't been around. He's not even in the United Kingdom, at least according to him. But I'm wondering, Sean, because Donald Trump showed up in the United Kingdom and Stephen Scott disappeared. Coincidence?
We've never seen them in the same room. I think that talks volumes. Let's say no more than that. But I'm sure he will return next week.
Hopefully he will be returning next week, unless he's flown away with that balloon that was spotted in London this past week.
I thought he was that balloon floating around London with the nappy on. Sorry, Stephen, but you're not here. You got to take it.
Sorry, Stephen. All right. Well, again, Stephen will be back next week. He is reportedly on holiday. We'll hopefully get an update as to what he's been up to when he comes back next week. But this week, Sean, boy, we've got a lot of things to get to. We've got a lot of interviews that we want to share with everyone. A lot of things going on because this is conference season, literally internationally, it seems like, because here in the United States, where I am, we've recently had the ACB convention and the NFB convention, which are big, huge national conventions. They do offer statewide conventions throughout the year in every single state. They have a smaller version, but this last week or so, they've had the big national conventions where you can go and get information about what's new in the blind and visually impaired world, in a way, find about new technology, new services. They have exhibits that you can go and take a look at. They have seminars put on by different companies, not just even visually impaired specific companies, but mainstream now, where you can go and listen in on these companies talking about the accessibility of their products. And so it's a big season over here in the VI community, as well in the UK. You guys have a very similar event each and every year. Now, they do small ones, but the biggest one happened this past week in Birmingham at the Queen Alexandra College, and that was Sight Village, Sean.
That's right. Yeah, you see, you've always got to say, over in America, everything's bigger and better. But no, we've got Sight Village, and it's the biggest UK VI expo on the calendar, really. It's great. It's in a new location this year. It's meant to be much more accessible. And yeah, you've got all the usual players there, Humanware and Dolphin and VFO. It's just a great place to go and get your hands on the kit and try it out for yourself. Because let's be honest, where else are you going to get the chance to play with so many pieces of technology and get information about services. Look, Braille displays cost thousands and thousands of pounds. Where else are you going to get the chance to play with one? You know, get hands-on with it. Try it out. These events are great for these sort of things. And that's what I'm saying. Get hands-on.
That's absolutely right, Sean. I haven't been to a national convention over here yet. I'm hoping to be able to go in the coming years, maybe next year. But I did go to a state convention several years ago. And it was so nice because even just going to the exhibit floor, I was able to talk to several different guide dog schools and compare how they offered their services and what the, you know, differences were, pros and cons, things like that. I was able to actually get hands-on, like you said, with several different products and several different services. There were different things that were being demoed for the first time. Things have been out for a while, but maybe I just hadn't been able to get my hands on. And it's a big event, at least over here, and I know Site Village as well. It's a big event for, like I said before, getting into those seminars or those talks with different companies to learn about their accessibility. I actually sat in years ago on a HumanWare discussion where they were talking about their Braille notes and voice notes and things like that, and talking about the new things that were coming. So it's so nice to be able to go somewhere like that. First of all, you're around people that are in a similar situation to you that are, you know, blind or visually impaired. So, you know, you can go and have that camaraderie and meet up with friends or make new friends. And then all of the tech and services and discussions and everything that's going on. Plus, they do a lot of things in and around the city where it's actually being held. So it's really a nice thing to go into. I never was really sure if I was into doing something like this in the past, but the more I've researched it and the one time I got to go, I have to say I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you're right. There is something about it. I mean, you know, yes, you've got the tech, you've got the services, you've got the information all there, but there is something about the social aspect, you know. I mean, between me and you, there is that getting together. That is a massive part of it, and it's always fun. I mean, we all know the saying, there ain't no party like a VI party. Is that a saying? I say this, and I haven't been to that many. I always want to, and we keep trying to, but I never seem to get the time. But there is something about getting together for a VI thing like this, you know. It is very, I don't know, do I want to say empowering? I don't want to say it, but I am going to say it. Empowering. It's nice when we all get together. I mean, we keep saying here on Tech Talk that, you know, we need to get there. We need to do a show from there. We need to get in the expo. But I don't know. We just never seem to get it together. We always, something comes up and we can't make it, Stephen.
Yeah, something that comes up, like when this was held on the 10th and the 11th of July and Stephen Scott goes on holiday. So yeah, something always seems to come up.
Exactly. Yes, let's blame Stephen.
Holiday is much more important. But no, you're right. These are a lot of fun. And Site Village really is a big deal. Like you said, this is a big event. They do scatter them throughout the rest of the year. Another one's going to be coming up later in the year in September, but this is the big one. The one in Birmingham is really the big deal. All the big companies, all the big exhibits are there. And like you said, the workshops. And what's really nice about Site Village, and they do the same thing here in the States, when they had the ACB and NFB conventions here, the KNFB Reader app that you can get on your smartphone was like 40% off or something like that. So for a period of time, you could get it at a cheaper price. And they do a similar thing there at Site Village with companies like Freedom Scientific, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's got to be the biggest draw for the last few years, is the amazing discount you get on some of those products from Sight and Sound VFO. And, you know, if you're at all interested in getting Jaws or Zoom Text or anything like that, this is the place to go. This is the time to get it. Just look at something like Jaws. You know, it at Sight Village, you can pick it up for starting at £99. I mean, that is such a discount. It's, it blows my mind. And that's got to be a massive reason why a lot of people go. But to say that as well, even if you don't manage to attend Site Village, the offer is on till the end of July. And you can just get in contact with Sight and Sound and you can purchase it, you know, with the discount, even without attending. It's a great deal. There's no other way to describe it.
And I believe it was no more than £120, depending on the version and package that you purchase. So an absolutely fantastic deal. You're talking, 70 or 80% off the retail price of Jaws and other products as well, because you have to remember they do own AI Squared and other things. And there's other services and products that were on sale as well. And like you said, Sean, the deals do go up until July 31st, which is fantastic. And what I would encourage people to do is take a look at our RNIB Tech Talk podcast feed, because last Monday on July 10th, in the feed, there's a really good interview conducted by Simon Pauly, where he talks to Mark Evans about Site Village and everything coming up. Now, this was conducted on the first day of Site Village, so some of the information may not be as applicable anymore, but Mark Evans does go into more detail about the products that are going to be available and the things that are going to be on sale. And they do have a nice general discussion around Site Village and what it's all about. So I do encourage people to go take a look in our podcast feed at that interview that Simon Pauly did last week.
Yep, absolutely. And again, you will find that in the RNIB Tech Talk podcast feed. So check out your favorite podcast app and search for RNIB Tech Talk. I'm not sure there's much news to report from Site Village, but if you did go, then it would be great to hear from you. So get in touch.
Absolutely. And actually, there was an event in Glasgow, Scotland this last week on the 12th of July that was a Sight and Sound event that they put on. And RNIB's own Alan Russell was there to do some interviews and talk with people at this Sight and Sound event in Glasgow. And the first interview we're actually going to share with you is Alan talking with Eric Damery. Now, Eric Damery is the Vice President of Software Management for VFO, and Alan Russell talks with him about what's new with VFO.
For those who perhaps aren't aware of the name VFO, tell us about the organization.
Sure, VFO is the kind of the parent umbrella to a number of companies now that have come together. Freedom Scientific, AI Squared, makers of ZoomText, the Optelec company in the Netherlands that does video magnifiers, Enhanced Vision in the United States out in Huntington Beach, California that does video magnifiers. And we've got a couple of companies that do services, the Passiello Group and Interactive Accessibility. And so we've got quite a collection of folks now, and we cover the full gambit worldwide.
And when you say the full gambit, you know, we're talking braille, speech, magnification, as you say, all under one umbrella. So if we were to look at assistive technology, that, you know, here we are in the 21st century, we've had screen readers, magnification out for quite a few decades. Do you find that there's a lot more catch-up now you're having to do, and constantly, not perhaps reinventing, but refreshing and updating your software and technology?
Yeah, things have changed quite a bit. When I first came into the industry back in the mid-90s, most of the companies were, you know, some were as small as two or three people, and a large company back then was maybe 20 or 25 people. And we were just trying to, we weren't really recognized by the major players like Microsoft and IBM. We were kind of an afterthought, and we were hacking around. We were trying to cut into the operating system and capture the information and then reformat it and deliver it in a way that we could. Today, it's different. Microsoft is clearly engaged, and they're spending a lot of time trying to make sure that they're delivering information in a proper fashion that all assistive technology can tap into and get. So today, it's different. We're focused on usability instead of just trying to get access to it.
Almost working hand in glove, and that must be a benefit to companies like Microsoft, because at the end of the day, you're developing products which give access to their products.
That's right. We're working very closely with Microsoft, and you know, fortunately, they've got some assistive technology of their own built in with Narrator and magnifiers. So, in order for those products to work, they have to create accessibility into their applications. And when they do it for their assistive technology, it means it works for ours, and then we can focus on really providing the added benefits, the optical character recognition, or the features that people want, like text analyzing and skim reading and all of those kinds of tools that we can provide.
We are talking also, if we're to take JAWS, say, as an example here, it's a third-party product. It's an expensive product, but would you say that that's because the work, the development goes into JAWS to put it at the top of the pile, if you like, in terms of screen readers? That's a huge investment when you think of the work that has to go in to work with these products like Microsoft, say Windows, for example, which are themselves evolving on it very rapidly.
Yeah, it is. It's expensive to get started with a license, but to maintain these things, I mean, there are people who bought licenses back in the 90s who have been paying for software maintenance agreements, which are relatively inexpensive. And we've been working hard for 25 years every year to keep updating it and keep it up to speed with what's changing in Office and the browsers and all of those things. So the support aspect and the continued development, it is expensive, and you know, we think it's been proven to be worth it. A lot of people benefiting from what we've done.
Have you found a bit more competition, if you like, from companies like Apple, perhaps, you know, having products which have assistive technology already built in?
Well, not really. I mean, we've never been on the Apple platform because Apple is a closed space and you really can't develop third-party apps to do that assistive technology. But I think what most people who have used Apple products realize is that, you know, it's a bit about checking the checkbox. They created a tool, it works, but it's not necessarily getting the improvements day to day. And I think we'll see the same from Microsoft. Microsoft is going to do something that hopefully allows users to be able to install the operating system and its updates using its built-in tools, get by in a pinch and get started. And I think we're even going to see that Microsoft will make Narrator feel more and more like a traditional screen reader. They'll start to use the same keystrokes that JAWS uses in order to make it more comfortable for people who just need to get started on a computer. I think that'll ultimately lead people to want to get much more, and we'll be there to provide that.
What about open source products like NVDA? They're snapping at your heels as well.
So they've been around now since 2007 or so. It was a great tool created by a couple of JAWS users, one of which has moved on to Mozilla now. And you know, it is a, you know, a free and open source solution that has worked for, you know, many advanced users who get started with it at home. I think what you'd find is that most people who have that installed also have our product installed. And I think you'll also find that most companies and organizations, you know, government agencies that are employing people are not going to install open source products on their systems. It's just not going to happen. So for the most part, it's a good product, but I still think, you know, Narrator, as it improves, is probably going to cause a lot of problems for the open source community.
If we were to look at ZoomText, then again, you know, another product like JAWS that's been around for quite some time and has undergone a lot of changes itself. What are people telling you they want from magnification products now?
Yeah, well, it's stability and it's performance. They want it to be stable. They want it to be quicker, and they want to make sure it's working with the latest and greatest technology. And then I think they want to see it interact better with other products. So they want to see it work better with JAWS. They want to see it work better with video magnifiers and the new hardware technology that's coming out. And they want to see it deployed in such a way that it can take care of everybody who might walk into an organization. And that's what we've created with our Fusion solution. So you can have one install that gets JAWS and ZoomText in there, one license that covers them both. And this is what I think lots of consumers are looking for, and certainly what big organizations are looking for. We've done deals over the past few years with the country of Colombia, Spain through the ONCE organization, and we just signed an agreement this spring with Hungary so that everybody in the country now has access to ZoomText, JAWS, Fusion, Magic, everything. And it costs the individual nothing. The entire country is covered.
Braille is still a very important medium, if you like, for blind people to communicate. Are your customers still using Braille? We were working with Braille displays and so on. Is there still a demand there?
There's a huge demand there. It's a growing demand, too. And it's all about literacy. You know, if somebody is going to be effective in employment and education, of course, they've got to be able to read and write. Braille's the key to that. And if they're going to be a good Braille reader, having a Braille display to be able to interact with their computer can make sure that you've got accuracy. If you're using a spreadsheet, if you're working in an employment situation where you have to read account numbers or deal with numbers in any fashion, having a Braille display available to review that stuff and make sure that you get it right is really important. So I think good access to Braille, and we've continued it with our Focus Braille line. We've just released the version 5 this year to create a great display. And we've added in something called a scratch pad now so that you can literally, with your Braille keyboard and your Braille display only, take notes on the fly.
What about the future then for BFO and for the products you have? Are you looking ahead at the moment? Anything that is interesting? Any tidbits for us?
So we certainly are going to continue to evolve the software as we go, but we're looking for opportunities to expand and push the envelope a bit. We want to try and find ways to get access and communications directly with wearables. I think this is something that people have a lot of interest in, and we want to make sure that these products start to communicate and work better with each other. So I think that's especially true with things like cameras that would be used in an educational space, to be able to share data between the camera view and the magnification software on the PC and do it in real time and be able to work with it in real time is going to be very, very important, and you'll see more of that.
And you mentioned wearables. I mean, that is the future. We have home assistants. We have smart devices now which we can wear. Can you see the products you have at the moment evolving into some of these?
I think you'll start to see some of that. You'll also see some cooperation. So there's an organization that's become very popular now in the U.S. in particular, the IRA group, and they've got glasses and they've got an app that you can put on your iOS or Android device to be able to have a sighted agent interact with you. And recently, Freedom Scientific, VFO in the U.S., has signed an agreement with them to be able to start using IRA agents to assist owners of our products to be able to get free minutes and be able to interact with it. So I'll give you a good example. A user gets a new computer at home, and they're trying to get the installation done of something, and they get hung up and they get stuck. They can pick up their phone. They can call up the IRA agent, and say, you know, I'm trying to get assistance installing my VFO software on the computer. The IRA agent clicks something on their screen so that Freedom Scientific is now picking up the minutes and paying for that for them. And the agent will be their sighted assistance right there.
Fantastic idea. Certainly look forward to learning more about that. For the moment, though, Eric, thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Great. Good to be here. Thank you.
A lot of interesting tidbits in that interview, Sean, especially Mr. Demery's comments about NVDA. And what really jumped out at me was him talking about the future of VFO with wearables and their partnership with IRA. I really like the fact that they're looking into that. I could find myself getting really excited about a JAWS wearable of some kind, or some sort of, you know, VFO wearable.
Yeah, that's right. Well, firstly, let me say this. Alan Russell, what a professional, a brave man, bringing up the NVDA question. Gotta say, loved it. Good work, Alan.
Yeah, that was great.
But yes, doesn't it ask, it raises more questions than it answers, doesn't it? Wearable tech, what are they thinking with this? First thing that comes to my mind is, you know, something like Orcam. Is that possibly going to become part of the VFO group? Who knows? IRA, the IRA agreement sounds cool. It reminds me very much of the Microsoft and Be My Eyes customer support deal. You know, it does seem a direction that companies are going in.
And it kind of makes sense, because if they can contract someone else who already has that customer service installed in their company, or that's already their model, why not use that and have that available through that other service rather than having to do it yourself? So it saves them some money. I mean, yes, I know they're picking up the tab when it comes to the minutes that you're using in IRA, but I still think it's just a fantastic partnership. And I am so interested in this wearable thing going forward. I really want to know more. Like Alan said in the interview, that just opens up a whole bunch of more questions, and as you said, you know, begs more questions than it provides answers. But that being said, Alan wasn't finished at the Sight and Sound event in Glasgow. Alan also sat down with Ruth Gallagher Carr, a representative from Sight and Sound.
I'm Ruth Gallagher Carr. I'm the Business Development Executive for Sight and Sound Technology, and we are at the Mitchell Library, and we're doing some assistive technology display here with alongside Eric Damery's talks.
Ruth, you're demonstrating or showing some of the products here at the library. Talk us through some of those.
Yes, I am. So we have some low vision products. So we've got some portable video magnifiers. So we have the Ruby range, so going from the Ruby HD through to the Ruby 7 HD. We've also got the incredibly portable and foldable Topaz PhD and the Onyx desk set, which is a desktop video magnifier with an amazing camera that does near and distance view. It's got loads of room under the camera, so you can do lots of manual things under there as well as your reading.
So with the video magnifiers then, I mean, how good are they now? We used to have LCD displays and things like that. Yes. Are they really high definition now? And how portable or usable are they?
So absolutely. So I've been doing, well, working in this field for nearly 13 years, and the technology's just got better and better and better. I'd say the core build of a video magnifier hasn't changed. It's the camera plus screen, but that technology has improved so much over the last few years. So the clarity on the screens is so much better. So something like the Ruby, that's what a lot of people like about them, is the clarity on the screens. Something like the Onyx, which will do, well, times 100 if you want it to, and still maintain a really crisp image, is actually phenomenal. That camera, I think, is unrivaled. It's a brilliant bit of kit.
What about the products now? Are they working with other pieces of kit? Can they be connected up to other things?
Yes, so you can connect them to computers and do split screens, things like that. I'd say actually the biggest change with the video magnifiers is the inclusion of OCR technology. So now we've got, so the Onyx desk set, for example, comes as an OCR version, and it has a touch screen, a very large touch screen, which is phenomenal. Just tap the screen, it will take a picture of text and then read it back to you. So the OCR technology built into the video magnifiers has made a huge leaps and bounds over the last couple of years.
What about products for actually on your, say, your PC or your laptop, then moving away from the magnifiers themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've also got here a computer that's running ZoomText Fusion, which is the latest iteration of ZoomText and JAWS. So now that they're all under the same umbrella company, they've produced Fusion. And I've got that attached to a Braille display as well, so Focus 40 Blue Braille display. I've got that one and the new fifth generation Focus Blue Braille displays as well.
Something I've noticed with friends of mine is that those who use screen magnification software, so say ZoomText, mm-hmm. and perhaps that their eyesight starts to deteriorate, they're then having to almost relearn JAWS and Windows programs and things again. It's quite a leap from one to the other. So does this allow you to learn both almost at the same time?
Exactly. They've done an awful lot of work over the last couple of years to bring the two in line. So now actually it's well, hopefully a much more natural natural move from one to the other. So the keystrokes for ZoomText are now mimicked with keystrokes for JAWS. So the learning curve is infinitely less severe if you're moving from one to the other. It also gives you the flexibility. So ZoomText Fusion can be run just as JAWS. It can be run just as ZoomText Magnifier or ZoomText Magnifier and Reader, or you can run it as Fusion. So you have the visual options given to you in ZoomText, but also the full screen reading capabilities of JAWS.
And all important Braille displays as well. You know, even in the 21st century, we've got all this tech that can read things for us and so on. But Braille is important in terms of literacy. You know, it's a good thing to know what a sentence is saying, but you know, with punctuation, spelling, all that kind of thing. So the Braille displays, how have they changed then over the years?
Well, first of all, more robust. So certainly with the fifth generation Braille Focus Blues, they've made them military grade drop tested, believe it or not. I haven't tested it yet though. the actual, obviously a Braille display has lots of tiny little movable parts, so to make that as robust as possible is really key. But also things like they brought in things like the scratch pad feature for the Focus Blues, so you can launch a little scratch pad, so like a little text document, quickly make a note of something and save it to the SD card, and then either transport it to a computer or just come back to it later. So, and then close it down, go back to using it as a refreshable Braille display. Neat little features like that mean you don't have to go to a full-blown note taker. You can just keep it within your refreshable Braille display.
With things like Zoom Text and JAWS, then how portable can you move them from sort of computer to laptop? Can you move them around quite easily?
Yes, so certainly if you get the license on a USB pen, then the which you can do, then the activation sits on the USB pen. You can install the software as many times as you want to, and then just use the activation in the computer you're using it on at any one given time.
Really, some fantastic products, and always good to hear how they're adapting as time goes on as well. But for the moment, thanks for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
No problem. Thank you, Alan.
Thanks to Alan Russell and Ruth there. Some great information. Let me just say this. Military-grade drop-tested Braille displays. How cool is that? That sounds amazing.
It is absolutely cool, although in a day and age where we're trying to get, you know, less expensive Braille displays, that doesn't sound like it'd be all that inexpensive. But I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but it sounds awesome.
Absolutely.
Now, Sean, we're going to get into a little bit of the news here in just a moment, but before we do that, I did want to tease a little bit because I forgot to say this at the top of the show. Later on in the show here, in just a moment after the news, you're going to have a review of Amazon routines for your Amazon Echo. So I'm really looking forward to this and hearing what you have to say about it.
Yep, Amazon routines. I don't hear them talked about very often, but they can be so useful. You can make your own custom commands that you can say to your Amazon Echo or Dot and get her to do various things. They're great. And yes, it finally happened. I did crumble and succumb to the ongoing pressure. I found the time to make a feature. So I hope people will find it useful. And it's coming up after the news. Stay tuned.
Yes, definitely. Please stay tuned for that. But first, it's time for this.
News from the internet.
Well, Sean, this last week was jam-packed with hardware announcements, not only from Apple, but also from Microsoft. So you've had a chance to take a look at both of these, and I'm really interested to hear what you have to say. First of all, let's go to Apple, talk about their new MacBooks.
Yeah, this was so strange. It just came out of nowhere. You know, we've recently had all those Apple events, and no MacBooks here, don't look here. And then all of a sudden, here's the new MacBook Pro for 2018. Enjoy. What? No. Where's the fanfare? Well, there wasn't one. And to be honest, I'm not entirely sure it would deserve a fanfare anyway. I know, harsh. So, the new MacBook Pro 2018, basically it's a CPU refresh. Intel has recently made available its latest generation of processors, the Intel Coffee Lake. I mean, Coffee Lake, where do they get these names from? It's beyond me. But anyway, the Intel Coffee Lake, yeah. I can't even say it. The Intel Coffee Lake processor, it's bound to be faster, more energy efficient. You know, it's going to be a great processor. And that's what they've done at Apple. They've introduced these to the MacBook Pros. Along with this, though, they've given the option for up to 32 gigabytes of DDR4 memory. And, and get this, up to 4 terabytes of SSD storage.
Wow.
4 terabytes. I mean, SSDs are amazing. I love them. They make such a difference to a system. The speed increase is incredible. 4 terabytes. I mean, wow. The cost alone is going to be huge. And, of course, it's Apple. It has got sticker shock to it. And, in fact, if you went for the top-end MacBook Pro, which is a Intel i9 processor, which is amazing, 32 gigabytes of DDR4 memory, and 4 terabytes of SSD storage, you're looking at $7,000.
Just buy a couple of them, yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's crazy. But hey, it's Apple. We've come to expect that from Apple, and they're good at it. You know, they've got nearly a trillion dollar business, and they're doing something right.
You definitely are, and I wouldn't be surprised if Stephen had one by the end of the week, even though he's tiptoeing back the Chromebook and PCs, you know, for his dilemmas the last few weeks. But yeah, rest assured, he'll probably have one within a week or so's time. So that came out of Apple this last week, Sean. And then Microsoft, not to be outdone, although I think theirs was first, if I remember correctly, Microsoft came out with a new tablet in their Surface line called the Surface Go.
Yeah. When did this happen? I mean, when did Microsoft become interesting? It's a real strange place now because I'm really interested in the hardware that Microsoft releases. And I mean, that never happened. It was always boring Microsoft, but no, not anymore. So recently they revealed their Surface Go. I'm sure most of you are aware of the Surface line of tablets. They are really nice pieces of kit. They run Windows. Their hardware is really good. The specs are really nice. They run it just like a laptop, really. You know, it's not like these other Windows tablets, these cheap ones, which don't really run Windows very well. It's slow and terrible to use. No, the Surface line are really good, but they're expensive. So here comes the Surface Go. It's a 10-inch tablet. It's running a processor called the Pentium Gold. It's interesting. Apparently, its performance is in line with something like an Intel Core i3. So, you know, not stunning performance, but good performance. It's got USB-C. It's got a memory card reader slot, which supports up to 1 terabyte memory cards for, you know, extra storage, which is great. Look, the hardware isn't stunning. It's not, you know, top spec, but it is good enough. It should run fine. You know, we will find out when people get their hands on them for review to see what the performance is like. But the price tag at around $300 or $400, which
I believe it does come in around $400.
Maybe, you know, around £300 or £400. It's in line. The hardware is in line with that sort of price, and it's a competitor to the, you know, the recent iPad, the budget iPad. I know probably we shouldn't call it the budget iPad, but that's what it is. The iPad has great performance, and that was released for around the same $300 and something, you know, same in pounds. So, it's going to be interesting. Look, the big draw for this is that it runs Windows 10. Now, there is one caveat to this, and that is that it's Windows 10 S it's actually running. You may have heard us talking about this before on this show. S is a version of Windows which is designed for tablets. I think the S actually stands for student. It's slightly cut down. Now, the thing with it is that you cannot run third-party software on it. You can only install apps through the Windows Store. That's a problem for me. You know, the Windows Store apps haven't been a great experience accessibility-wise, so that is a problem. And when you think of something like, will you be able to install NVDA, JAWS, or other assistive technology on it? I would hope so, but I don't know that for sure. I would hope there's a caveat that you could put assistive software on it, even if it is third-party. But you do have the option to upgrade to a full-fat version of Windows, you know, the real Windows 10, for a fee, obviously, but that may be the way to go. But either way, look, this is a really nice piece of kit, running Windows and at a decent price. I like it.
I can't disagree with that. Absolutely. For a 10-inch tablet that's $400 or less, I think it is interesting that they're trying to go into that iPad competitive market for that lower end price. So good on Microsoft. I think this is going to be really interesting. Well said on you, Sean. You covered it all very well. Now, I want to get to a couple more things. We're going to run out of time, and we won't have time for your Amazon piece. So I want to get a couple things in here real quick. No, we'll make time. We're absolutely going to make time, Sean. We want to get it in. I'm just going to quickly mention something that maybe I'll try to do a short piece on for next week when we get into more. But Apple in iOS version 11.4.1 has announced something called USB restricted mode. Basically, to give it a quick one-liner headline, this is something that if your phone hasn't been locked within more than an hour, it will prevent people from brute forcing into your phone or your iDevice. So whether it's a criminal or law enforcement, they won't be able to use hardware devices to break into your phone. So we'll talk more about that maybe next week, because I want to get into a rant that I know you want to have, Sean, and I want to give you time to do this. Google, with their various voices they now have with Google Assistant, they wanted to be politically correct, and they have male voices, they have female voices, but instead of giving them names, they've assigned them colors. Please tell us what you think about this, Sean.
I think this is perfectly reasonable, Tim. I haven't got a problem. No, I have. I've got a problem with this. I hate this. I hate it. Now, let me say this first. I cringe whenever I hear someone say, oh, it's political correctness gone mad, because most of the time, I don't think it is. I think political correctness is just common sense. It's common courtesy, sympathy. It's empathy. You know, most of the time it makes sense. But then there's this. So Google have come out and announced that there seems to be a tendency for using nice sounding female voices for tech. You know, that seems to be the way that the companies are going. And in order to try and make their voices gender neutral, instead of having just names, they're going to call them by colours. What? What are you talking about? As soon as you hear a text-to-speech voice, you identify the gender, okay? It doesn't matter what it's called. Just calling it a number or a colour doesn't make a difference. I just do not understand this. People have preferences. We all like voices. We like what we like. I know lots of people that like the Ava voice. I know lots of people that like the Australian Lee voice. You know, lots of people like Eloquent's voice. Oh, that is gender neutral, isn't it? Oh, I don't know what that is. But for Google to come out and say, okay, I think this is the best way to do it. Instead of giving them names, let's just call them colours. I just do not understand that. I don't understand why it makes a difference, and I don't understand what the problem is. Now, maybe this is a case of, you know what, Sean, you're 45 now, you're middle-aged, you're not with it, you don't know what's going on, you're that embarrassing old fella that everyone says, it's all right, he's a different generation. Maybe that's the case, but I just do not understand where the problem lies here. I'm speechless.
You're speechless after 2 minutes of ranting, absolutely.
Sorry.
No, but I see your point absolutely with this. I mean, they already had them just numbered one through however many, and now they're assigning colors because they don't want it to be gender-specific, even though the voices sound very gender-specific. So exactly. I absolutely get your point on this. Good on Google to at least allow there to be multiple voices. I am happy about that. There is talk about them actually trying to adopt celebrity voices, and I think that'd be a lot of fun. I'm really hoping Amazon gets on that brand wagon as well and maybe offer more voices than just Lady A. Nothing wrong with Lady A, but I would like to have other voices, and you know, especially celebrity voices or just, you know, common voices. That would be fantastic. So yes, absolutely ridiculous. Please tell us what you think about this. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Is Sean right? Is Sean wrong? Is this political correctness gone too far? What do you guys think? So we're running short on time, Sean, but I want to make sure that we get this piece in that you've done. So here is your review of Amazon Routines.
Trigger warning. Please be aware that in the audio that follows, there may be a slight possibility that your Amazon smart speaker could be triggered. In order to help minimize this possibility, I will replace the wake word with the phrase Lady A. However, I would recommend you mute your smart speaker now, as I cannot be held responsible for any embarrassing, accidental purchases made while listening to this audio. Thank you. Are you tired of hearing about smart speakers? Everyone seems to be talking about Amazon Echo this, Google Home that. You can't get away from it. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm going to carry it on because I love them. They are amazing and so useful. I've got multiple Amazon Echoes, Google Homes all throughout my house. I can't get enough. And today, I want to tell you about a feature you may not know about available on the Amazon smart speaker. You know what? In fact, let's ask her. Lady A, what am I going to talk about today?
Today, Sean, you are going to tell people about an amazing feature I have called Routines. Please try not to make it sound boring. And to help you out, here's some music I think is appropriate.
Wow, boring. Everyone's a critic. That was a routine. So let's take a look at what they are, what they can do, and how you can make them.
What do you mean we need a break from the old routine?
We need a break from the old routine.
What do you mean we need a break from the old routine?
You know what I mean.
What do you mean
now,
we need a break from the old routine?
We need a break from the old routine.
What do you mean we need a break from the old routine?
We need a break from the old routine.
So, what are routines? Well, basically, they consist of two things. Firstly, a trigger. And secondly, an action or a set of actions to be performed when that trigger is triggered. So, for example, in that intro, the trigger I set up was me asking, what am I going to talk about today? And when I said that, the actions performed were Lady A coming back with what she said and playing that tune. Easy. And in a nutshell, that's all there is to it. It is fairly basic. There are only two triggers you can have, either a voice command or on schedule. So, for example, at a certain time, perform these actions. And likewise, the actions are pretty limited. There's only a few different types of actions you can perform. But still, they can be incredibly useful. If not useful, then fun. There's nothing quite like going away on a trip and setting a scheduled routine to wake up your partner every morning with an insult and a song she hates. Anyway, enough of my relationship advice. Let's get on and create a routine. It's simple. Okay, so I'm using my iPhone 6S, but this should work the same on Android too. So let's open up the Lady A app and find the menu button. It's the first item on the screen. You will find it in the top left corner. So once you found it, double tap to open it up.
Menu. Music. Video and books. Button.
Now swipe to the right until you find Routines. Double tap here to enter the routine setup screen. If you've already got some pre-existing routines you've already created, you will see a list here. You can edit them, delete them, enable, disable them. But if this is your first time creating a routine, you will see this message.
Create routine. Alexa can perform a series of actions, such as reading the weather and turning on the lights, with a single command.
Straightforward enough. Okay, so we're looking for the Add New button up in the top right corner.
Add New button.
Double tap.
New routine.
This screen can seem a little bit complicated and confusing, and we all know that the Lady A app, particularly on iOS, is a little, let's say, iffy when it comes to voiceover focus, so you're never quite sure where you're going to start. But all you need to do is swipe through until you hear this.
When this happens, X, you say Alexa, good morning.
Don't get confused or worried by the good morning text you heard there. That's just an example routine that they put in place every time you create a new one. So double tap on this and it will take you to the trigger selection screen.
When this happens, voice, schedule.
So there's only two options here, voice or schedule, and you choose which one you want to use as your trigger. Now, the schedule is just a case of picking a time when you want this to start. But I'm going to choose voice, and I think that's probably the most common one. So let's double tap on
voice. Text field is editing. Enter phrase.
So far, so good. So here we need to enter the phrase that we want to speak to Lady A when we want to run the actions. I want this routine to get my studio ready when I'm ready to start recording a show. Now I say studio, it's actually a shed at the bottom of my garden, but that's not the point. So the phrase I'm going to use is get studio ready. Once you've typed whatever phrase you want, swipe through until you find the Save button.
Text field is editing. Get studio ready. Save button.
Once you double tap on the Save button, it will take you back to the Create New Routine screen. So let's take a quick swipe around just to see where we are.
New routine. When Alexa, get studio ready. Alexa, add action X. Play weather. Create button.
You can see our new trigger there at the top, and as you can probably guess, the next thing we need to do is add an action. So swipe through until you hear this.
Add action X. Play weather.
Again, don't worry about the example action that's already in there, play weather, because we're going to change it. Once we double tap on that, we are going to get a list of all the different types of actions we can add.
Add new. Alexa says, music, news, smart home, traffic, volume, weather.
That's the list. Now, I'm not going to go through each one and explain what it is, because I think they're pretty obvious, really. News, weather, traffic, etc. But the more interesting ones, and the ones you'll probably use the most, are the Lady A says, music, and smart home. So in my case, for this routine, what I want it to do is give me some sort of verbal response when it's heard me, turn on the studio lights, and turn on the studio fan. So the first thing I'm going to double tap on is Lady A says.
Alexa says, custom, good morning, phrases, sing a song, tell me a joke, tell me a story.
So this action is what the smart speaker will say back to you. As you heard, there's a list here. You can choose various phrases, good morning, good night, happy birthdays, sing a song, tell me a joke, things like that. but I'm going to choose custom and type my own response.
Custom. I'll enter response. Text field. Is editing.
You can type any response you like in this text field, up to 250 characters. Now, I say you can type anything in there, but you know, don't be childish.
I'd rather not say anything rude.
Anyway, once you're done, just swipe through until you hit the next button and double tap. This will take you to the next screen, which is just a confirmation screen. If you're happy, double tap the add button.
Alexa will say okay, getting studio ready. Add button.
You'll then find yourself back on the create new routine screen. Again, let's just take a quick swipe round to see where we're at.
New routine. When. Alexa, get studio ready. Alexa, reorder action. Say okay, getting studio ready. Delete action. Button. Add action. From the device you speak to. Create button.
As you heard, because we've added an action now, we've got a few more elements to this screen. Reorder the action, delete the action. And also, because the action we added is a verbal response, it asks us, where do you want that verbal response to come from? If you've got multiple speakers in your house, do you want it to come from the living room, the bathroom, the kitchen, wherever? But in this case, and most cases, the default action of, well, whatever speaker I was talking to at the time is the right one. Now that's basically it. We've created a routine. We've got a trigger, we've got an action. If we double tapped on create, then we would have a perfectly working but useless routine. So let's make it actually useful and add another action. So let's swipe through until we hear add action button.
Add action.
Double tap here and we will return to the actions type screen we saw earlier on. This time I'm going to add a smart home action.
Smart home. Control scene. Control device.
Here I can choose whether to control a device or a scene. Now I'm not going to go into what the difference is because, well, it would take too long. If you set up smart home devices, you'll probably know already. Either way, it's not really important. I'm going to double tap on control a device. When I double tap, it will give me a list of every smart device that's on my network.
Harmony Hub, living room, studio heater, studio light.
As you heard, there's two smart devices I've got which are related to the studio. Studio heater, which is just a smart plug I've called studio heater, and the studio lights, which is a LED light strip. Now, as I said, the studio heater is just a smart plug, and depending on the weather, I either have an electric heater or a fan plugged into it. Obviously, because it's so boiling at the minute, it's like a sauna in here, I have the fan plugged in. So, I'm going to double tap on that.
Studio heater. Turn on studio heater button. Next button.
So the only option I have on the studio heater screen is to turn it off or on. If I double tap where it says turn studio heater on, it will obviously change to turn studio heater off, which I would use if I'm creating a routine to shut down the studio and turn everything off when I finish recording. Of course, what options you see here depend on the smart device you're using. For example, on the studio lights, I can choose to not only turn them on and off, but also what color I want them to be and the brightness. Anyway, once you've set your options, click on the next button and you will be shown the confirmation screen again. If you're happy with it, just double tap on add.
Alexa will turn on studio heater. Add button.
Anyway, I'm getting bored with the sound of my own voice and I'm sure you are, but you get the general idea. Once you click add, you will be taken back to the new routine screen. And from there, you can repeat. Just keep adding actions until you're done. So let's skip ahead a little and look at the final routine after I added the Studio Light smart device.
New routine. When. Alexa, get studio ready. Alexa, reorder action. Turn on studio light 100% daylight white. Delete action button. Reorder action. Turn on studio heater. Delete action button. Reorder action. Say okay, getting studio ready. Delete action button. Add action. From the device you speak to. Create button.
That looks good to me. Now I should reorder that a little so it does say getting studio ready before it turns everything on, but it honestly doesn't really matter that much, but it's something you can do. It's accessible. So I'm happy with that. Let's double tap on create.
Success. It may take up to 1 minute for voice routines to be ready to use.
And that's it. We are done. We have created a beautiful, lovely, useful routine. So let's try it out. Lady A, get studio ready.
Okay, getting studio ready.
You're going to have to take my word for it, but the studio lights have come on, and you probably heard the click of the smart plug turning on, and you can probably hear the fan running from that. And everything has worked. Easy! As you can see, routines can be very useful. As I did mention at the start, it does feel a little limited with the amount of actions and the type of triggers you can have. But Amazon are working on adding more actions, and I think it can only get better. Now, obviously, I think this becomes more useful if you have smart devices. Being able to control them using custom commands is really cool and really useful. Anyway, that's it. I hope you found that helpful. And do have a play with it. Don't be worried to get in there and mess around. You can't do any harm. And let me know what routines you come up with.
As usual, Sean, well done. And I have to say, I really like how Amazon has implemented these routines. It might seem like a small thing, but being able to group so many different things together like this, it makes it so much more useful. It's like the future is now.
The future is now. I love that one. I'm going to steal that tagline. Yes, you're absolutely right. It's something that I think is hidden away and a lot of people don't know about, as I said in the piece. But it did remind me, it's similar to the Siri shortcuts that we all got very excited about when they were announced in iOS 12. You know, that ability to make your own custom verbal cues. And
oh, yeah.
Yes, it's a little bit limited and you know, I wish there were some more actions, but yeah, it's growing all the time. When it was first released, it was just news, weather, or traffic. And now, with the addition of the smart home and the music and the volume control, it's pretty powerful. And it can make some fun times. As I said there's nothing like waking up a partner with a song she hates. It's like an annoying alarm. Perfect.
It is a interesting use for it, to say the least. But no, I agree. I really like this. And hopefully they'll just continue to expand it, very similar to Siri shortcuts. The sky's the limit. So good on them. I think we'll enjoy this a lot going forward. Well, Sean, that being said, believe it or not, we are out of time. This hour continues to just fly by each and every week. So, Sean, I want to thank you so much for joining me this week and helping me through this process.
Thank you.
And I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. You can send your emails to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And real quickly before we go, on the 19th is my daughter Alyssa's birthday. So happy birthday, Alyssa.
Aw, happy birthday, Alyssa.
We'll see you next week right here on Tech Talk.